First of all, let's go to the review and approval of the previous minutes of November 16th. Are there any changes, or do I have a move for approval?
Second?
I didn't hear it.
Did someone make a...
No, we made a motion.
Oh, okay.
I'll make a motion
to approve.
Okay. For a moment there, I thought I lost it.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, second.
Okay, meeting seconded, so the meeting minutes of the 16th have been approved.
Yeah, I would grab two more.
Party there.
All right, you can go on.
Okay. Okay, we're moving on to public comments, and we have one card here from somebody. What is this guy's name? Brian?
Party Crasher.
Yeah, Brian Swanson again. Oh, hi, Brian. Yeah.
So I'm just here to, I guess, relay my observations from the November 28th council meeting that in which city council adopted their mitigated negative declaration for the Iron Horse Trail overcrossing project, and really ask or implore you guys to have more public engagement opportunities as design begins. First and foremost, despite all the claims and all the previous work that's gone into the actual design of the overcrossings, there was no one there that spoke in favor or against the actual design of the bridge. I think Lisa and the consultant were the only ones that were actually at the podium. And so I guess to me that signals that there's still some uncertainty in the actual design. Second, on the consultant's presentation slide regarding the response to comments, they specifically addressed City Council's need to address the comments made to the overall design and merits of the project. And if you were at the meeting, you would have watched that Councilmember Sachs was the only really member that really gave really thoughtful or extended comment on the project, and his comments were very general in nature and didn't get to the methodical sort of design issues or the merits of the project at all. I think he may have spent maybe 6 or 7 minutes sort of in his comments, but in his comments too, he also sort of expressed that design could change. So again, despite sort of all this rev up to, yes, this is designed for Bollinger, again, there's another point of uncertainty in that. And I guess given the total, 12 million in grant funding involved, money that can actually be spent for projects in other jurisdictions, I think we need to really have a little more due diligence from City Council in terms of how the design and how the project is more moving forward. I really think the project needs to be a shining example for OBAG 2 and Transportation Livable Communities programs. So if you weren't at the meeting, if there's anyone here that would like to discuss it and sort of refute some of my observations, I'd be happy to do that. But I just wanted to get the sort of flavor out there from everything I saw in the November 28th meeting.
Will there be further meetings on design issues relative to the...
So, Mr. Chair, well, this item's not on the TAC agenda tonight, so we really... So I'm not at liberty to discuss all the details, but moving forward, yes, there will be more opportunities for the public to provide comment during the final design phase. So what the council did on November 28th was adopt the initial study, mitigated neg dec. The next phase of the project is final design, where the public will have opportunities to comment again.
Apparently,
I would just say that given my, I mean, it is a little weird to have sort of this uncertainty going forward with the environmental document. I mean, you look at the Bay Bridge, and the design had to be nailed down before most, at least conceptual design, the way it look and feel of the bridge actually was going to happen was sort of agreed upon, and there wasn't sort of this room for negotiation. I guess I just have concerns that the project will continue like some of what a city center does. If you don't know, city center, actual Bishop Drive is gonna move 20 feet, and there's really no opportunity for the sort of public to be involved in that process or really knowledgeable about how things have changed in terms of design and construction and actual implementation. So that's where I'm coming at when I am asking for more opportunities for input, and hopefully the due diligence with that, especially the grant funding that's sort of out of the city's realm, I think really needs to be, again, sort of have a tight eye on it and really have some due diligence put forward. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Okay, anybody other public comments? Public comment? Okay. Moving on, 4.1, new business, the Innovate 680, presented by Tim, I believe. All right, Tim, thank you.
So thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members, and everyone, for the opportunity to present Innovate 680 to you. Innovate 680 really evolved out of our update to our comprehensive countywide transportation plan. And we did a really extensive outreach. We did an electronic town hall system, and there was a lot of concerns, and I think everyone will share those same concerns about the congestion on 680. And so CCTA commissioned a report called the I-680 Congestion Relief Transit Study, and through that study developed alternatives and options, and basically those options evolved into four projects that I'll ultimately discuss at the end of the presentation. So as you know, the 680 Innovate 680 project, it's going to involve all our partners. It's a regional project. We're going to be working really closely hand-in-hand with all the cities and partners in the corridor. We're actually in the process right now with the RTPCs, so TransPAC and SWAT, to develop a policy advisory committee, which will be solely developed of elected officials, and then a technical advisory committee. And so the PAC and the TAC will have oversight of how the project evolves going through project development. So I think everyone is aware of the issue along 680. It really has to be based on the jobs and housing imbalance in Contra Costa County. A lot of people are basically leaving Contra Costa to go to jobs in San Francisco and South County. And likewise, there's also other folks, believe it or not, coming to Contra Costa County as well for jobs or for services and commercial related activities. And so what that kind of results in is almost all of the trips are actually ending Contra Costa. So only 13% of the trips on 680 actually go through up to the North Bay area, which is which was something that kind of shocked me as I was starting to get involved with this project. And so really the problem, I think, as everyone knows, is if we don't do anything in the 680 corridor between now and the 2020, the commute is going to rise by almost, you know, quadruple in time. And so we're looking at close to, you know, an hour and a half of delay in the corridor if we don't do anything by the year 2020. And so in the 680 corridor, there's already been some really key capital improvements. There was the auxiliary lane through Danville and San Ramon. MTC just opened up the express lanes from Livorno up to Red Deer. And then CCTA also has our express lane project that'll be starting construction early next year, and that'll be in the southbound direction only. It'll be solving the gap of HOV in the southbound direction and then converting the entire HOV lane to an express lane from Rudgear, which is where the current MTC project ends, all the way up to Benicia Martinez Bridge. So after the completion of this project, there'll be express lanes in the southbound direction, essentially from county line to county line. And so there will still be this northbound gap, which I'll talk a little bit later, but the I think the key message here of this slide is that there's really this lack of physical space in the corridor to really do any significant, substantial improvements in the corridor. You know, we're not going to be able to really widen or build ourselves out of congestion in this corridor. So we developed an integrated approach, a holistic approach, that's going to address the congestion on 680 in the future. And so our main goals for the project are shared mobility, mode shift, and person throughput. And so we really are focused on that because in order to really, we're not just focused on just the freeway system, we're actually focused on the entire transportation system in the corridor and really maximizing different modes and making sure we fill empty seats in cars and within empty buses so that we were getting the most efficiency out of the corridor. And so we developed 7 strategies. So after the I-680 congestion relief transit study was developed, we actually took that to another step further and we developed what's called a design alternatives assessment that looked at the corridor and identified 9 alternatives in the corridor, which includes some transit components, included auxiliary lanes, collector distributor roads, interchange improvements, some of those recommendations were incorporated into these strategies, such as the first strategy and the second strategy. And then we started looking at other strategies that were recommended in the 680 transit relief study. And we started looking at bus on shoulder options. We also started looking at more ramp metering along the corridor. And also a shared autonomous vehicle as well. So we essentially had 4 reports that were developed. The original I-680 report, the design alternatives assessment, the ramp metering, and the bus on shoulder feasibility study. Those 4 reports basically resulted in these 7 strategies. So first strategy is really going through the corridor and fixing the hot spots in the corridor. So through our studies, we've identified some bottlenecks based on weaving, based on lane drops, through the corridor from basically Livorna up to Treat Boulevard. And so in the northbound direction on 680. So this is actually just one of the strategies. Some of the other strategies is actually do some isolated widening to address auxiliary lane and operational type improvements. This is actually an area where we're looking at a braided concept between Lawrence Way and Treat Boulevard. So if you drive this frequently, Lawrence Way is essentially just dumping unmetered traffic onto the 680. It's really causing a significant bottleneck in the corridor. And so how do we really solve that? So this is one option, which is a braided concept where you braid the off-ramp to Treat Boulevard with the Lawrence Way on-ramp. And then another concept, which is not shown, is a collector distributor road concept. So you're basically building a road parallel to the freeway, collecting all this traffic from the ramps, and then distributing them downstream beyond the bottleneck. The next one is the northbound express lane project. And so this would complete the express lanes in the corridor. It'll address the HOV gap at the 24 interchange. And we're basically looking at potential reversible lanes there or contraflow lanes. We're looking at potentially moving the arc column and the median to address a complete express lane system in the corridor. And this would extend the express lanes all the way to Benicia Martinez Bridge. The next one is bus on shoulder. And so the bus on shoulder would operate the buses on the shoulder during peak periods only when the adjacent traffic is operating at 35 miles an hour or less. So this is a slow moving type operation. This is not a bus that's like driving, you know, really fast down the shoulder. This is really similar to the successful bus on shoulder operations that have been going on for many, many years in Minnesota. And then we're using the exact same guidelines where they don't go faster than 35, and they also don't operate more than 10 miles an hour more than the adjacent lane. And so what this is really providing is a much more reliable and efficient transit service, because right now the buses are sitting in the congested HOV lanes and the congested GP lanes, and so really bringing those buses outside to the outside shoulder really provides them reliable space to be operating, and then also direct access to on and off ramps. So that way the buses aren't having to merge across all the lanes to access the interchanges, thereby causing even more congestion. And so our goal is to operate these buses. Right now there's only about one or two buses operating the corridor per hour. We want to increase that to five or six, because once we can provide more reliable transit service, we want to increase the bus service to where we're about 10 to 15 minute headways. And the bus on shoulder operations would be from Bollinger Canyon all the way up to Ignacio Valley Road, or Valley Boulevard, or Valley Road. So that's what those are the limits of the operations. It would be done as a pilot program. It'll be one of the first bus on shoulder operations in the Bay Area. So the next strategy is what's called innovative operational strategies. And this is a suite of technologies that we're bringing into the corridor. We're considering this third generation integrated corridor management. And what integrated corridor management does is it really helps manage the congestion on the freeway more efficiently. And so through using ramp metering techniques and also ICM techniques and managing congestion more efficiently, there's a similar type approach that was used in Australia, in Melbourne, Australia, on the M1 and M4. It's the only technology in the world that's actually using the type of technology we're considering here. But they were actually able to squeeze out an additional 20% capacity out of the freeway without widening the freeway at all. And that's essentially just managing the congestion more efficiently in the corridor. And so in terms of the ramp metering, we're talking about third generation integrated corridor management. The I-80 Smart Corridor, if you're familiar with that corridor, that's considered first generation ICM, or this is third generation ICM. The ramp metering is also, third generation ramp metering. So first generation ramp metering is all the ramp metering that you're all used to, where the ramp metering is just looking at freeway traffic that's upstream. Second generation ramp metering looks at what's happening downstream when the ramp meter releases the traffic into the general purpose. This is third generation. This is actually what's called coordinated adaptive ramp metering. And that ramp metering has the technology to communicate to all the other ramp meters in the corridor and be able to orchestrate and collaborate to manage traffic on getting onto the freeway in a much more coordinated manner to help manage flows along the corridor. And then similarly, we want to take similar type traffic signal synchronization type concepts and bring those onto the local roads, such as Bollinger Canyon, Ignacio Valley Road, Sycamore Creek, Willow Pass Road, along the corridor. And so what you're doing is that you're not just focused at the freeway and the ramp meter, you're actually focused on the system and you're managing flow all the way up to the freeway, getting onto the freeway, and then even on the freeway with ICM. So it's a complete synchronized managed system along the corridor. And so the ramp metering and these strategies, we're really focused on these strategies at Bollinger Canyon Interchange and providing congestion relief at Bollinger Canyon and Bishop Ranch. The next strategy is preparing the corridor for the future. So if you know anything about CCTA, we like technology. And so this is actually bringing in dedicated short-range communication in the corridor. And so this is really preparing the corridor for the future in terms of vehicle-to-infrastructure and vehicle-to-vehicle technologies. And so an example of this would be the buses in the shoulder, they would actually be able to communicate to the ramp meter, so that way the ramp meter will know when a bus is coming, it'll hold red, so that way the bus can travel through the ramp safely. So that's an example of what benefits of vehicle-to-infrastructure technology bringing in the corridor. And as I mentioned, we want to bring some of these strategies onto the local roads. And so we want to provide better access jobs, services, and goods, and also employment centers. And so Bishop Ranch is an employment center. So we really want to take Bishop Ranch, Bishop Bollinger Canyon, the freeway, and provide better access to and from employment centers along the corridor, including park and rides, BART stations, etc. And that we're also relying on our shared autonomous vehicle to really help us manage congestion and manage that connectivity for first and last mile from your home to the park and ride, from home to BART. And so we really want to use multimodal, options for your trip. And then lastly, the seventh strategy is transportation demand management. And so this strategy is really intended, once you have this entire system in place, this strategy is intended to manage the entire system. And so the way we want to do that is really orchestrate and bring together all mobility options and develop a single platform through an app in Contra Costa County. And what this app will do is it will, you'll put in your origin and your destination, and then what you'll do is it'll provide you all your mobility options available to you. And this is typically called a mobility as a service app. They've just deployed one in New York. They're starting to look at some in Texas. We've been in conversations with folks in Germany that are using these types of apps. And so what this is intended to do is give you your mobility options, give you travel time savings and costs, and even for when you're driving your car. So for example, total cost of the trip. So if you want to drive, take your car, it'll actually know that you're going to have to pay parking at the end of the trip. It'll incorporate that into the cost. So if by knowing the total cost and also the total time, you'll be able to pick the most cost-effective mode of transportation for your trip that particular day and that particular time. And then through the same app, you would actually schedule your trip, you pay for your trip, and then you would also track your trip. And then through the tracking component of it, and by using different modes, the whole key, one of our biggest goals is mode shift. And so what we want to do is we want to reward people who take other modes. So we're actually going to be putting an incentive rewards-based program developed on the app. It'll understand the miles you're taking based on different modes and then give you rewards based on that. And so we're actually doing a pilot right now in-house, a closed beta-tested pilot in-house of this rewards program, and it's working out great. It's basically, it knows when I'm taking a car, it knows when I'm taking BART, it knows when I'm on a bus, and it's basically giving me rewards for every mile I'm taking, and then also incentives. So then the other thing is we want to bring in, travel time and speeds and incidents, just like regular Google Maps. So that's why I don't really highlight that functionality, but just how your Google Maps does when you enter in your navigation, it'll have that same functionality as well. So what are the benefits of all of these strategies? So the first is driver benefits. So we've actually, through all of these strategies, realized a 70% reduction in travel time and also increased travel speeds in the corridor. And then in terms of transit benefits, because of that bus on shoulder operation in the shoulder, we're actually able to realize a 13-minute travel time saving for buses, which is actually a 47% reduction in travel time. And then also by bringing the buses out of the HOV and out of the general purpose lanes, the single occupant vehicle and the high occupant vehicle also realize travel time savings in the corridor. And one aspect of always a benefit is by providing congestion relief, we actually get better air quality in the corridor, and it also result in safer roads. And I think this is something that we've been really focused on at CCTA, is really by reducing congestion, through these seven strategies, we want to be able to provide better access to jobs, services, and goods, and also more opportunities for access. So I think as the growing ages get older, we want to make sure that they still have the ability through our shared autonomous vehicle and other modes of transportation to be able to still have access to the same things that you do now in everyday life, thereby maintaining that quality of life. So how do we get there? How do we deliver what we call the first connected corridor in the Bay Area? So here's the seven strategies. These seven strategies will roll into four projects. And so right now, CCTA is actually initiating these projects right now. And so the advanced technology project will include all of the technologies in the corridor. So this would be the integrated corridor management, the ramp metering, the DSRC, the dedicated short-range communications. Our second project is bus on shoulder. The third, which will improve the shoulder, improve drainage in the shoulders so that way the buses can operate in the shoulders. It also, the third project is express lanes, and so that's that north, solving the gap and doing the northbound express lane extension and also cooling the corridor hotspots and addressing those bottlenecks. The fourth project is what we're calling the transit improvement project. So along the corridor, in order to have that bus on shoulder operations function, we need to increase the additional buses that are operating the corridor. So this has additional funding for buses, but it also improves four park and rides in the corridor and actually upgrades them up to share mobility hubs. So this is bringing in, instead of just focus on buses at park and rides, we want to bring in different mobility options. So we want to make it more convenient for Uber and Lyft and bicycles and pedestrians, ride sharing, bike sharing, car sharing. We want to bring those options into these share mobility hubs. And so our overall schedule is approximately 3 to 5 years over the for the entire program. Our Expand Express Lane network from 2018 to 2021, that's our current Southtown Express Lane project that's going to start construction early next year. And then the green is really where we're focused right now. So over the next 3 to 5 years, we plan to deliver, and this is project delivery, this is not construction. So this is project delivery, this is getting project shelf ready. Okay, so 3 to 5 years for completing the Express Lane network, getting the bus on shoulders going, and then the innovative operational strategies, and then deploying our shared autonomous vehicle. And then I can provide updates on any of this if you have questions. And then the last part of that is getting the bottlenecks addressed along the corridor. And so in October of this year, the CCTA board authority took action on a strategic plan amendment that allocated $40 million to fund these four projects. And the $40 million is basically to get us through planning and environmental of all the four projects. And so we want to do, the reason why we're focused on that is because by getting the projects through planning and environmental, it'll help us leverage the $40 million for additional funds through these various funding programs, such as SB1, the Congested Corridor Program. And so in order to be eligible for that program, you have to have an environmental document completed. And so that gives us the ability to be eligible for that program so that we can continue to fund future phases and also for construction. That concludes, so one aspect of this, and this is, you know, Lisa asked me to talk specifically about Bollinger Canyon. And so really, I know everyone's really concerned about Bollinger Canyon, the congestion that's happening there. And so really our focus through this overall regional program is to really leverage the advanced technologies to manage the interchange way more efficiently. And so our goal of Innovate 680, you know, is really taking the next generation of integrated corridor management and combined with ramp metering and really improve the operations on Bollinger Canyon, like I mentioned. And basically what we want to do is through this overall regional program, we want to we're just starting out, we're just initiating. And so what we really want to do is understand the benefits of these types of strategies at hot spots, I'll say like this, at the local level. So in other words, this is a regional project that's really helped to provide local benefits. It's not really focused on, you know, this big, huge regional freeway project. It's really looking at these strategies and saying, hey, how can we really provide local benefits? In Bollinger Canyon is a prime example of that approach. So that concludes my presentation. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. I guess to give everyone just a little bit of an update on kind of where we're at overall, because there's been a lot of development over the last couple of months, is, like I mentioned, we're forming the PAC and the TAC with SWAT and TransPAC. That's been going on. We just got our TransPAC PAC and TAC approved today. Mm-hmm. We're working with SWAT to do that in January. Mm-hmm. And then once we get the PAC and the TAC on board, we're going to be going out with a series of RFPs over the first half of next year for all these four projects. So we're already talking with Caltrans to initiate these projects. We already have an executed co-op agreement with Caltrans for the 680 Express Lane project. So we're already moving forward with taking the design alternatives assessment and converting it into a Caltrans approval document. And then the next step there is we're initiating with Caltrans some of the co-ops on the advanced technology and bus on shoulder projects. We just had a call with CHP yesterday. CHP is very interested in bus on shoulder, so we're tackling that as well, and we're coordinating closely with them and also with Caltrans. So we're just, you know, we're making sure that we have this is a really big project. It's about a $300 million investment in the overall corridor, and we're basically making sure we've got a really solid foundation to build on. Before we start moving forward all the projects. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
And then if I may add just one additional item. So also today we confirmed a stakeholder meeting between the city, the Transportation Authority, Caltrans, and Sunset Development to talk about specific improvements to the Bollinger Canyon interchange. And so that meeting will take place, I think it's January 23rd. So that project, while it's specific to Bollinger Canyon, it does take into account the entire 680 corridor. Thank you, Tim.
You're welcome.
Any question?
So the study itself, you said, is going to be released for an RFP in the first half of next year. And what's the time frame for the study?
So the bus on shoulder and the advanced technology projects, they go hand in hand, because in order to operate the buses, you need the ramp metering. And so the ramp meter is in the advanced technology project. So those two projects go hand in hand. And so based on our conversations with Caltrans, we're actually doing a streamlined process for both those projects. And so we're planning on getting those projects ready to be approved by Caltrans within the next 3 years. The bus on shoulder project is fully funded all the way through construction. And so, and the advanced technology project is almost fully funded. I think we have a shortfall of about $7 million on the advanced technology project. So those two projects, we're trying to get, because those projects are, as much as they're very technology-wise, they're very complicated, but the projects themselves are, you know, they're within the existing Caltrans right-of-way, they're isolated civil improvements, and so they're actually easier, I'll say, to get approved. Through Caltrans versus a big, large express lane project. And so we're hoping to get those projects delivered within the next 3 years and start construction on both those projects within the next 3 years. And then on the express lane project, that has the bottleneck and the hot spots and then the express lanes, and that project will go through the full rigorous, you know, Caltrans process, you know, planning, environmental design. And so that project, we're anticipating that project will probably take about 5 years to get through project delivery and start. We would start looking at starting construction, I think it says up there, like year 2022, 2023. And so, which is actually perfect timing. If you're familiar with SB1 funding, it's perfect timing for the next cycle of SB1 funding, as long as it doesn't get rescinded. Mm-hmm. You know, but and so that's why we're really focused on really getting those advanced technology bus on shoulder projects, you know, shelf ready, because they're practically fully funded, and then we're focused on getting express lanes shelf ready so we can qualify for the next fund cycle of SB1 funding.
And then the Bollinger Canyon operational study is that like a year time frame for the planning study?
So that's actually the focus of the meeting that we're going to have on the 23rd. So the 23rd, because I think everyone's concerned that, you know, we have this Innovate 680 project, big regional project, you know, it's going to take 3 to 5 years, you know, City Center is going to open sometime next year, so what do we do between then and now, right? And so that's really the focus of the meeting on the 23rd, is to really talk about, you know, what are some, you know, incremental type improvements, you know, that we can bring in to Bollinger Canyon Interchange between now and the opening of Innovate 680. And that could be potentially a small scope of Innovate 680. You know, so those are some of the discussions we're gonna have at the meeting on the 23rd.
And the funding for that study has already been allocated. It's been approved by SWAT and the Transportation Authority.
Yeah. Any other committee questions?
All right. So, a couple questions. So, can you? I mean,
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I believe this is just committee members now can respond. We have to suffer outside of the committee. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else from the committee have a question? Okay. We have to move on to the next item. I'm sorry. Moving along.
Oh, if he does have a question about this, he can speak now after the committee.
He can speak after the. Oh, okay. In that case, you're on.
So we heard a couple things very high level, and we heard about the meeting, and we heard signal synchronization as sort of the lead item, at least in my head, that sort of
you know, is pretty localized, and granted, anything to improve the system is always better for the locality too, but are there other items that beyond, I mean, I know we're sort of expanding the widening of Olinger Canyon and the on-ramp. We're going to put a signal there on the on-ramp, but
I mean, like what else?
There are other things that sort of pop to my mind that you're sort of hesitant to sort of mention, and so.
So in our ramp metering feasibility study, you know, we looked at widening the ramps at the interchange. So we also looked at, I'll say, what we call channelization improvements at the interchange. So, you know, making you know, adding more lanes, etc., to the actual interchange. And so those are some of the type of incremental improvements that we might potentially break off of Innovate 680 and maybe deliver them in a separate way. But those, and then also, you know, signal synchronization maybe along the corridor. But I think all of those options are really going to be discussed at this upcoming meeting. But the only thing I can say is that the Bollinger Canyon Interchange, it's a in the transportation world, it's a full partial cloverleaf interchange. It's probably one of the most high capacity, most efficient interchange configurations that you can actually put at a local interchange. And so, so in order, really, what we need to really understand through studies is how can you get that interchange to operate, you know, more efficiently. You know, so that's really, I think, what we're going to be focused on.
Okay. And in terms of parking rides, no more parking rides for San Ramon, or that's still on the table, or what?
I think that needs further discussion and further understanding of what that is. So in our scope, we basically have improvements to four parking rides along the corridor. And those four parking rides, that's that fourth project, the transit improvement project. That project right now, it needs more definition. And so we have general scope, and that's basically improving or adding four parking rides along the corridor. And so that might be San Ramon. We just need to have those discussions as we further define the scope of the transit improvement project.
And then bus on shoulder, how long is the sort of test period or trial period so you know whether you go with the thumbs up all the way or not so good and let's try something else? And
you know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question yet, because we were just initiating the project with Caltrans and CHP. So I don't know the answer to that question right now. It's definitely going to be a topic of discussion for sure. You know, but I don't know the answer to that question right now.
Anybody else? Tim, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing the rest of the success of this program.
Yeah, no, it's we're really excited about it, and it's I think what we believe is really the next generation of mobility, because I think everyone realizes, you know, we don't have billions of dollars to extend BART, we don't have billions of dollars to widen lanes on freeways, and so we're really, you know, we're really, really focused on. You know, how do we get these really constrained type corridors? You know, how can we manage congestion more efficiently? And so this is like a pilot of that concept in the Bay Area, and Caltrans, MTC, and CCTA are all really excited about it. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, moving along. 4.2 Crow Canyon Road widening project status. Like Teresa Peterson.
Thanks again for having me.
Thank you so much
for the rest of the meeting.
Come.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. Nice meeting everyone.
sorry, I didn't want to do that. Well, questions were still happening. I didn't know if we need to refer to PowerPoint or not. Let's make this go away. All right. All right. Good evening, and thank you very much for having us here tonight. I'm going to try to talk a little louder since we're making sure that our offices are extremely clean. Try to talk a little louder. If you can't hear me, let me know, and I'll try to speak up a little more. But as you said, my name is Teresa Peterson. I'm an associate engineer in the Public Works Department. Joining me tonight is Robin Bartlett. He's our division manager in engineering. Deborah Fear is our associate traffic engineer. And last but not least is John Zomer from RJA. He is our design consultant for the plan line study. So tonight we're here to talk about the plan line study. There's a lot of information in the staff report, but I just wanted to hit on some important topics. And then we'll actually go through the plan line with Mr. Zomer here. So it's basically widening on Crow Canyon Road. The limits are Alcosta Boulevard to Indian Rice Road. This work will be broken into two phases. So the first phase is from Alcosta to St. George, and that we're looking to begin construction likely in fiscal year 2021. The second phase is St. George to Indian Rice Road. That design is more than 5 years out for that portion of the project. So immediately we'd look to do the phase one and begin design very soon on that. So with this project, we're proposing one new travel lane in each direction. We're proposing to improve pedestrian facilities. Right now, there's an area about a half a mile, a little more, that does not have sidewalk connectivity on the north side of Crow Canyon Road. This is between Shoreline and our Public Works Center. Let me get the name for you here. there's not connectivity. Shoreline and, Reedland Circle. It's about a little bit over half a mile, and there's no sidewalk on the north side. So we would be adding that sidewalk, so adding the pedestrian connectivity. In addition to that, we'd also be making improvements to our bicycle facilities. So we would be increasing our bike lanes. Right now, they're approximately 5 feet in width. We would be increasing them to a minimum of 8 feet. And at intersections where you have vehicles that are going to make a right turn, we would go to 10 feet, so there would be much more room there. So those are pretty big advantages, I think, for pedestrians and bicyclists as well as drivers of traditional vehicles. Construction impacts. So there's always construction impacts when you go through something like this. Some are temporary, so noise and traffic. When we're building the project, we're going to have lane closures. Those will be during off-peak hours, maybe some night work, things like that. But those are temporary, and they'll be over when construction is finished. There are some long-term construction impacts. We have a lot of trees in the medians in these areas, trees on the outside of the roadway. Adding an additional lane and these nice wide bike lanes, there are going to be tree removals associated with the project. We will, however, evaluate the trees and see which trees we can save, and then where we can replant new trees when we finish the phases of the project. So we'll be following the recommendations of the Doherty Valley Tree Committee in that capacity. So those are pretty much the construction, main construction impacts that I can imagine. Really good with this project, no new right-of-way is required. Therefore, our existing environmental document does not need to be amended or anything like that, because we don't need to take any new right-of-way. We will need an easement, and the easement is from an HOA, and what it is it's an area that we're going to build a water quality detention area. And so that's basically for new regulations for C3 water quality. That's something that's required for the project. So it's very likely that that small portion that's off of the roadway will be built with phase one of the project from Alcosta to St. George, so that we can have that C3 component done. And that component will cover the entire project. So later on when we come back to build the second portion, unless regulations change where we need more, we should be good for that. So staff will work also closely with utility companies. So there will be utility relocations, as there are on Bollinger Canyon Road. We did the same thing there, where we work closely with all the utility companies. Actually, through this plan line, we've already started reaching out to the utility companies. We've had meetings, we've had field walks with them, so we have a good idea that what we're showing in the plan line is actually feasible, and we're going to be able to build that. And the utility companies already kind of have a heads up that that's coming in the future. It's always good to start as early as possible because they're extremely busy and they have a lot of projects. For design, we're anticipating about 18 months for design. It could vary depending on utility relocations is really the big thing. Also, public outreach. You know, when we go to the homeowners, when we go to the HOAs regarding this project, that could also affect the time frame. But we're anticipating about 18 months. So you may ask, why are we doing this project? So Crow Canyon Road, traffic has increased steadily in the last 20 years. And right now, Doherty Valley is only about 75% built out. So they do have more building, they do have more houses, which means more vehicles on the roadway. There are also developments in Danville. A lot of people use Crow Canyon Road when they're coming in here to work or such. So it's also a requirement of the agreement to settle litigation relating to the Doherty Valley, so otherwise known as the settlement agreement. This widening is required from there. It is listed in our general plan, and it's also in the Tri-Valley Transportation Plan that will have three lanes in this area in each direction. So according to the Tri-Valley Transportation Plan and the Action Plan update, we're projected between 2015 and 2030 that traffic will grow on Crow Canyon Road by 28%. So what that means is that by 2030, we'll have 28,000 vehicles on that roadway. And for comparison, that's basically what Bollinger Canyon Road between El Costa and Canyon Lakes uphill has right now, and they have three lanes. And if you've ever been on that road where there's a lane closure for construction, you know how congested that gets. Tonight, we really appreciate your feedback on the plan line study itself, the future design, if you have any comments or any questions or anything like that about it, and then also the timing of construction. Our plan is, we have a few steps that we're planning to implement. Number one is to incorporate any feedback we get tonight. Number two would be taking the plan line to City Council in early 2018 and getting authorization to begin design, because right now it's just plan line. So it's basically a plan line like a feasibility. Mm-hmm. Can we do it, and what does it involve? Mm-hmm. So the design would begin. We'd hopefully get authorization. And then at 35%, we would go back to City Council. Prior to 35%, we would reach out to homeowners, the HOAs, and talk with them about the project, see what they think, what their feelings are, if they have suggestions, and then go back to City Council at 35% and say, this is where we are. You know, are we on the right track? Does this look good to you? And then finally, once we're finished with the design, we would anticipate construction in 2021. And so that's kind of a summary of what we're going to discuss tonight. I'm going to hand the presentation over to John Zellmer. He's going to go through the actual plan line and just kind of show you briefly what the proposed construction is. And then after that, we can collect feedback and take any questions that you might have.
Thanks. Good evening. I told Teresa when she went over her presentation she wasn't going to leave much for me. And, you know, I brought a full-size set of plan. I think you've all seen the plan line study in your packet. I kind of realized as she was talking, this is probably the best thing for me to review. We can certainly look at any of the sheets in detail that you want, but been working on this project for quite a while. The way I generalize it, and I think it could kind of hit some key points to remember, it's about a three-mile stretch, okay, the whole thing. The first phase, which starts down at Alcosta and goes to St. George, is about a mile. The second phase, oops, yeah. It got bigger, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm trying to
which goes down to Indian Rice, is mm-hmm. the second phase. That's roughly about 2 miles. The first phase is really the most complex by far. And the reason I say that in the context of the second phase, because it was built later as development occurred east, a widening to three lanes was already accounted for. If you drive it, you will notice that the center medians have berm. The big thing is that the curb inlets are set back. So aside from the trees getting much bigger, that's a relatively simple design. We've got some intersections, we've got some signal upgrades, et cetera, those types of things. There's already been, through development, improvements, improvements to the eastbound portion through this stretch. But that is it's a longer stretch, but what I consider as a civil engineer to be a much more simple and straightforward improvement. This area, if you've driven it, there's just a lot of things going on. There's a lot of grade there, and as you know, the road serpentines quite a bit. And we have to widen the road on both sides. It's just when we look at the number of lanes, the addition of 8-foot bike lanes, which you know are larger, you'd be surprised with 6 feet. I certainly was as we went through the plan line study, the impact that has. So, you know, there's a reduction in the median, the widening of the lanes, turn lanes, etc., between these two points. And the big thing is just as you're driving up and down the road, you'll notice in some stretches, you know, the sidewalk is significantly higher than the road, and that's where most of the joint trench facilities sit. So as Teresa mentioned, we've been talking with those people, understanding that the improvements we're going to do, especially at intersections, they're going to have to do their design, get their work out of the way in order to allow us to go to construction. So you may think of 18 months as being a long time, but unfortunately you can push a consultant, but you can't push PG&E. I've tried. So you know, that's kind of an overview. I think probably one of the other big things that she mentioned was the water quality area. And as we kind of went through the preliminary design and looked at it here, and that's, you know, right between Shoreline and the service center. If you're ever driving down through there, as you kind of drive the whole corridor, you notice there's not a whole lot of big spots in order to accomplish this. So we did a lot of calculations to really evaluate how we could do this, and we were fortunate enough to find a spot where we could literally, as we said, do it all in one place. It really becomes kind of a little bit problematic when you start piecemealing things, trying to meet the new criteria, which are quite cumbersome, especially for this type of project when you're constrained within, you know, existing physical constraints.
Would you like me to advance?
Yeah, I mean, we can go ahead and go to one of the first couple sheets, and I'll show you. I think when you look in the second phase, one or two sheets can pretty readily.
I'm sorry, I'm zooming.
You're getting bigger, huh?
Okay, here we go. This
should do it. So, I've done a lot of road widening, and one of the things we always try and avoid is if you can do it all on one side, you do it all on one side. That's the cheapest way to do it. It minimizes impacts. With the length of widening in the corridor and the grade, that just wasn't achievable here. But even at El Cap, you can see that what you see in red is really the existing condition. So we didn't have to make any changes in these areas. And then you actually go to the next sheet.
Oh, and I'd like to point something. I like to be totally transparent with you. Tahiti Drive right now has a right turn lane onto Tahiti Drive. That right turn lane in this new design does not stay. What it becomes is a very wide bike lane, as at all intersections it does. People are allowed to turn in here. And our traffic engineer has looked at the volumes. The volumes are very, very low for turning into Tahiti Drive. So this is one of the things that we will definitely bring up when we meet with the homeowners and the HOA. You know, but this is where there is an existing right turn lane, and it is going to not be a right turn lane there anymore. So I think that right turn lane was probably really built here because of the transition from El Costa the lanes on El Costa, the three lanes going into the two lanes here at Pro, so they needed to transition, and it was turned into a right turn lane here. So I did want to bring that up. So we'll go ahead and move it again.
So and there's some overlap, which is fine, but you can see, you know, basically the plan line in this particular case, three lanes each direction. I know it's probably hard on your 11 by 17, but when you kind of see these darker lines, this is where we had to use retaining walls. And again, if you're driving, I don't know how many of you live in the area or drive, but when you come through this stretch as you're heading up or down the hill, you'll start to notice that this piece of sidewalk on the north-hand side, I mean, it's as much as 6 feet above the road. So there's a lot of grade to contend with when all of a sudden, you know, you've got a curb here and a slope coming up, and we're intending on widening the road into it. You can kind of see the problem you run into. So there's really four sheets on this plan line that cover this first phase. It goes down past Barbados. Not to get into too much detail, but the ADA accessibility here, you know, one of the things we'll be doing is upgrading the current standards. This is terrible here. The existing condition, drive by and take a look. Not ADA compliant at all, so there's some significant utility relocations and design, retaining walls, etc. we need to do in that particular area. That's probably one of the trickier areas along the stretch in the first phase. And then really as you head down to St. George, there's a little bit of grade to contend with. It's ironic, in this particular area, the sidewalk's actually below the road. So, you know, it's crazy. I mean, we lived at this kind of hillside terrain. in the stretch, as you come down from Barbados, this is, you know, maybe as much as 3 feet below the road as it comes to St. George. The nice thing is this was a real tight constraint here at the apartment complex. There's a row of redwoods there. Mm-hmm. There's really a sidewalk, about 4 feet of redwoods, and a fence. So, and then it drops down into the parking area. So when you're looking at a preliminary, they say, well, you're not monkeying with that. Or you certainly don't want to. And in the geometrics, you can see we were able to hold that area and not have to mess with it.
And also, if we had to obtain new right-of-way, we would likely have to amend the environmental document. That adds a lot of time onto the project.
Yeah, when you start to have to get into these situations, that makes things even a larger headache and obviously greater time and expense. And then really, as we proceed east from St. George, you know, there's a few, and again, I don't want to get too technical, but
I did want to mention that St. George is where phase one ends.
Correct.
So this would be the design authorization we'd be requesting from City Council right now to design that section of it and get it ready for quick construction in 2021.
And then you can even say, I mean, it's a little hard to see here, but, you know, that's fine. So, you know, that's the bike lane stripe there, and then you have the 1, 2, 3 lanes, and you can see the new curb lines for the new median there. What you can kind of see underneath it is, like I was speaking about previously, where the existing berm is. So it's already kind of set up for us to be able to perform that widening. And, I mean, you can click through, but, again, you're not going to see in any of these sheets except at the intersections where we've had to pull the curbs back. In order to accommodate for the extra width, it's all within the median area. Oh, we get the shoreline. See, colored that blue for you, so we'll know where the water quality area is, and the new sidewalk beginning at shoreline, correct, which runs along that area all the way up to, well, it's actually keeps going to Beatley, correct? So we'll just stop here for a second. Again, you can see it's just kind of the same scenario. We're able to maintain the exterior curb and gutters in the second phase and just bring the median in. Now the only place that gets a little complicated from a utility relocation standpoint is in the second phase, because currently there are 3 lanes heading out of Blackhawk as it approaches this intersection. And what happens is the, I guess it'd be the southernmost westbound lane becomes a trap lane. So, you know, you come into 2 left turn lanes that take you down Doherty. Mm-hmm. So we actually worked with the city to look at that real hard. Mm-hmm. I'm always pushing, do you really need it? Do you really need it? Because I know, again, there's grade through here as we push it. And it was determined, yeah, it's needed. We need to maintain that 3 lanes all the way through. So this is probably one of the more complex areas in the second phase. You can see what we did is we color-coded all the utility boxes. So where they start falling on, you know, new curb, et cetera, those are obviously things we're going to have to coordinate with the utility companies in the second phase.
And this area is already restriped as 3 lanes in the eastbound direction between Doherty and Continued Out.
Right.
So this we won't have to do any new construction, except for if we do paving.
Right. You can see here we've even ghosted in the new ADA ramp upgrades.
But we have the 3 lanes. So that is pretty much the entire plan line. And just the information associated with it. So I think now we can go ahead and take questions and feedback and anything that you have for us here.
So is lighting included, John?
Yes, I mean, there's obviously a streetlight system out there now with the widening. The most of it, at least in that first phase, is going to be impacted. So a new lighting system, more than likely, at least the preliminary thought would be in the center median with double coat heads.
Yeah. So the communication with the residents and the HOAs already started, or?
Well, I have talked to the HOA representative that's at Tahiti there for that area, and I've just talked to them because he actually came to the counter while we were kind of in the plan line talking about doing new landscaping in the area. And I happened to be at the counter, and we just had the discussion about the project. And he did actually call me recently, maybe a month or two ago, just to kind of see where things were. And I explained to him that we don't have to take any right of way from the property, the private property. It's all in public property. So we'll do more official. It's just kind of unofficial. I happened to come to the counter, and we discussed it, and then gave him my contact information. So we have had some outreach, but not official outreach, but we will. The reason being is the plan line hasn't been approved yet, and so I can't officially say this is actually what we're going to do, because it could change, or we could say someone could say shelf the project for a while. Once we get authorization from City Council to move forward, and we have more design details to show before we're 35%, then that's when we would start, really showing our plans and moving forward that way. It is all in progress.
When was it that's planned to go to the council?
Early 2018. So depending on the amount of feedback we get and, we have to change things or add things, then that would kind of anticipate which meeting we go to. But sometime in early 2018. Within the next couple months, hopefully.
Well, since you have nothing to do between now and then, we're glad to see that you got something.
Yes. Keep John busy, too.
How is transit being incorporated in this?
So, as far as transit, well, we do communication with the bus system, so we would, talk with them as we move through design and see if there's any bus facilities or anything like that, like bus stops. As far as bus turnouts, I don't know if we have right of way in a lot of places, but we can look into that if that's something that they're anticipating, adding a stop or needing a turnout or a shelter or something like that. We definitely look into that and see if, we would be able to accommodate that.
Other questions? Anybody?
I have a suggestion for design. It's like, this is kind of based off of the bike system in Chicago, because it's really bike friendly. So I know that you guys are widening the bike lane from 5 feet to 8 feet or 10 feet. So instead of doing that, would it be possible to extend the sidewalk and then have the bike lane on the sidewalk? Because in Chicago, there's a sidewalk like this, and then the bike lane is here, and there'd be fence on the corner right here. So it's safer for bicyclists and also for drivers, and it's good for it reduces congestion. Mm-hmm. So would that be a possible design?
And we could definitely look into that and talk with our traffic engineer, our transportation department, about if that's something that they would be in favor of. Mm-hmm. I know that we do have a combined bike and ped path. It's not fence separated, but on Bollinger, we do have that aspect of. We get a lot of comments for people who would like for the bike lanes to be on the roadway. We do hear that, especially avid cyclists that like to be on the roadway and not on the path where you have kids and people with dogs on leashes and things like that, and strollers. And so it's definitely a good suggestion, and we can definitely look into it. Anything we can look into now.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a cultural thing by state. I'm with you. I don't like riding my bike on the road because everybody texting to me. It's a huge safety thing. But there's a lot of hardcore bicyclists in Northern California. I've never met one that didn't say, I want to be on the road. Don't get it. I think it's just they like to go fast and they don't want to conflict with pedestrians.
A lot of cyclists like to ride on the road because the bicycles are vehicles. And, for me, on my three-wheel bike, I might be on the path. not a motorized one either.
The other issue, too, of that would be bicycle groups. Because when you have 10, 20 people riding your bicycles, and you're trying to walk your dog or your kid across the street or something.
I didn't even think about that. That's a huge reason for maybe they're supporting that.
One of the parts of the widening the bike lanes is we're going to add a buffer. You start with a stripe buffer. There's a definite separation between the bike and the travel lane.
Anyone else?
We talked about the I-680 corridor, so I know you did give out some sort of comparative numbers with Bollinger Canyon. Do you know of the impacts to 680 and what that all brings? And we just got done with the conversation there, and so great, we're going to try and fix Bollinger over the next 5 years. And then we end up with Crow Canyon is our next sort of big lift, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just sort of keeping an eye on the system as a whole, and just those comparative sort of. Now, certainly, I mean, Crow Canyon is sort of more built out, at least right at the intersection area. And so it's even more constrained. There isn't the opportunity to widen. It's just more constrained. So there may be opportunities there, but it's not. They're not as big as what may exist at Bollinger right now. So it's just, you know, I don't think those numbers probably exist, but it's just to put out there that, you know, we're looking at the corridor as a whole. And sort of, we need to keep our eyes on each sort of feeder to the corridor. And I think you heard the sort of long lead time that the CCTA works in. And so we just need to make sure that's coordinated.
Yeah, I know for Crow Canyon Road, the initial widening was already done. So that area between Alcosta and the freeway is completely mm-hmm. widened already. Right. We're just following behind it and actually having the three lanes going into the three lanes at Alcosta should flow pretty well. Mm-hmm. And it's also, the reason why we want to do this is right now, you know, people may drive Crow and say, well, it's not so bad unless you have a lane closure and then you have a lot of problems. But it's only projected to get worse. And so if we delay construction, what we're worried about is we wait too long and the impact's going to be much, much more on the public. You know, closing a lane right now, we do it in non-peak hours. It's not fantastic, but, you know, you can live with it. Maybe a few years, not right now, but I mean, if we do the 2021, it turns into, you know, 25, 26 or something like that, then that'll be very impactful to traffic. So we want to start now before it's too, too bad, get it done and plan for the future instead of waiting until, you know, it would cause a lot of issues. Also, we're trying to time it so that Bollinger Canyon Road will be finished. And people can, during construction, divert to Bollinger Canyon Road instead of using Crow when we have construction. So we didn't want to do the two at the same time. Yeah. We wait till one's finished and, you know, move good that point. Way. So yeah. That's something that we definitely will do. We have had some suggestions about signage during construction to help kind of not detour people, but suggest that, hey, you know, we have construction on Crow, you know, but Bollinger's open right now, so that people know ahead of time and they can make that decision ahead of time to get on Bollinger instead of Crow. So we think that it's really important to, you know, get moving with this, to get approvals and to get this constructed as soon as possible, mm-hmm. especially with the timing that it takes for utility coordination and those relocations. We know from Bollinger that it takes a long time, and those utility companies, they're not dealing with just us, they're dealing with so many different entities, and you know, it just takes a long time to get that moving, so we feel it's urgent to start moving forward.
Yeah. All better to come ahead problem than after the problem.
You guys have the most committed janitor.
I think it's the end of the year.
Yeah.
I think they're actually never leaving the carpet. This is not regular. I think that this is the night they do the steam cleaning or something.
I think they're listening to our meeting.
Trust me, it's not every night.
Hard after this
evening. We used to have them on the streets, but I took the tar right off the road. Can't do it. Any other questions? Comments? Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
And are you supportive of us moving forward with going to City Council and requesting authorization to begin design and moving forward with construction as soon as possible?
Well, I'll let everybody else speak. And my point of view is yes, very much so. I'd rather you started now than when we had those roads so jammed full of people.
Yeah.
That then you shut it down a lane and screws up everything in San Ramon. Pardon me for my direct commentary, but anybody else?
So you want to take a vote? You want to vote on this?
Can you take?
It's your prerogative. It's up to the TAC if the TAC wants to make a motion
to take a vote on this. All those in favor?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
You take a motion.
Yeah.
You make the motion. Is there a second to make a vote?
Second.
Sukhinder, second. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed? No, I'm sorry. Stop doing that.
Okay. Well, thank you very
thank
much.
You so
for having
appreciate
us.
It.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, moving right along. Where are you hiding, PJ?
Yes, PJ is not here this evening. I am PJ.
All right, so 5.1 active residential traffic calming program.
Thank you. So you will all notice that there is not an RTC update in your packet this evening. That's because we have no new updates. So the only update we do have is on the radar speed display sign or the radar trailer. You'll see the memo from PJ. In the packet, the radar trailer was actually out of service in November. It's been fixed. It's back in service now the remainder of December. And so we will have data for you at the January meeting. Okay. And then just real briefly on that, we'll have PD attend the meeting either in January or February, but the city has received a grant from the Office of Traffic Safety, and our police department is purchasing radar speed display signs that can be deployed, installed on light poles rather than doing the trailer, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've asked PD to attend probably the February meeting to provide an update on where we are with that program. So next year you'll see a shift or a change in how we collect data from the radar signs rather than deploying the portable radar trailer. We will have another device that will actually be affixed to a traffic signal for a period of time, either 1 or 2 weeks. So more info to come on that.
Should we go to any traffic signal in town?
Or a light pole.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or a light pole.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, I see the schedule for the trailers after Christmas. There's some installation. Are you sure you want to have it during the holiday?
Yeah, you know what we do during the holiday? It's really a lot of times. So the radar trailer serves two purposes. One is it collects data, right, and it tracks the speeds, but it also is a deterrent. And so, yes, during the holiday season, you know, while we may not have traffic patterns, may not be normal, we have people out of town, but it is a good deterrent to have it just as a reminder to the driving public to slow down, right?
We only have one?
We actually have two, but one is used as a backup. The issue that we have is deploying the trailer takes a significant amount of resources and time with our police department. So we have one that's full-time in operation, one's a backup.
Another quick question. This is the 11th year of Montevideo and Veracruz. Don't we have that full-mounted sign right in the same area?
On Montevideo and Veracruz? Yeah. We do. I believe this one was actually closer to the trail. We had some issues with near the Iron Horse Trail, so I can.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was because I saw it. Yeah, the trail's crazy.
Yeah,
we've especially now that it's dark, people just like dart out.
Yeah.
Well, our new system that you can put on the poles.
Yeah.
During Christmas, we'll say ho ho ho. You've been fine.
Ho ho ho! Merry nice. Christmas. $25.
Okay. I saw they put new lights up there in Iron Horse Trail. Process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kind of helps.
We've changed the lights, right?
Well then, okie doke. Let's move right along real quick. Committee member items, anything? No committee member items? No city council member items? Because he's not here. I believe that's pretty much it.
We have the team council.
He waved me no. He said
he's new.
any commentary you'd like to make? Okay. In that case, by the powers vested in me by the city of Sacramento.